Now, while Audrey was talking, her new boss just walked into studio behind her. Minister for Agriculture, Martin Hayden, good morning.
Good morning, Philip, and good morning to your listeners.
And congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
For the second time today now, I find myself saying you don't have to be a farmer to do your job, but in your case you are, and from an early age as well, after your father died.
Yes, I was born in a small beef farm in South Kildare, the youngest of three with two older sisters. Unfortunately, my dad died in when I was eight. So my mother was left a widow at 43 years of age with three young kids. And
and decided against leasing the farm, which was the kind of the...
Exactly, in the 1980s.
The two roads diverging in a wood moment in your life.
In the 1980s with three young children, the advice to her was set the farm, have the income from that and raise your children. But Mam was a father and a mother and a farmer as well. And what she did was, she said if I grew up on a farm that was leased or set, that I'd never have that grow for farming. So we switched to suckler cows. We got a few suckler cows. It was a modest holding now. It wasn't big to start with. When I was able to go full-time farming in the 2000s, I was able to build a slatted shed with investment
into it. She packed you off to Kildalton from the moment that you were thinking about leaving school, yeah?
Oh, yeah. But like from 9 and 10, before and after school, morning and evening, we would... tend the stock, and as I say, we got into suckler cows, and then I went to Kildalton straight after school. Mam actually got remarried to a retired farmer, Dennis, who said to me after Kildalton, you have one opportunity here if you want to travel for a little bit. So I travelled for a few months. I came home. The farm, because it was a modest setting, was really only part time at that stage, so I got a job in Pudgeton Racecourse as a course builder to be able to farm part time, and I did that for 4 years till I was able to build home up enough to become a full time farmer, which I did then from about 2003 to 2004. At no stage in any of that time was being a politician on my horizon.
Well, I was going to say, did you enjoy farming? And if the answer to that question is yes, why did you become a politician?
I loved farming, but I'm a social butterfly and I love dealing with people as well. And the one thing I found was the solitary nature of it. And I know it's something the farmers can struggle with a bit. So being on your own in the farm all day and then not having that social network, actually, I got an injury, which meant I had to stop playing Gaelic football, but the GAA club was my social outlet. So at 21 years of age, I went down to an AGM and got proposed as PRO. And 2 years later, I became secretary of St. Lawrence's. And that then led to this whole community involvement. So
you're just like Paul Mescal, aren't you? You could have been a contender for Kildare.
Well, I had two ambitions growing up in life. One was to play football for Kildare and Croke Park, and the other was to be a farmer. I met it as the farmer. I never got to don the white jersey for Kildare. I wasn't of that standard. Yeah. But I suppose, you know, being involved in the voluntary GAA club, which had been instilled in my mother as well, she's, you know, this is where farmers are at. They're a central focal point of their community. My mother was sacristan of a local church. She was involved in loads of things and instilled that sense in us. As farmers, you're more than just your job, you're of your community.
All right, to business. You were listening very closely to Commissioner Christoph Hansen outside the studio there. I thought he was very non-committal on what he was going to recommend to his commission colleague about retaining the nitrates derogation. It doesn't sound like the Irish government argument is getting through.
I was very disappointed not to get to meet him. I was due, if I had been appointed as Minister of Agriculture on Wednesday, I was due to meet him for breakfast at 7 o'clock on Thursday morning. And unfortunately, with the delay, then that didn't happen. But I was really encouraged by his language, by his tone. I know he visited the Byrne family farm in McGainy outside of Atai on Thursday morning, which I'd hoped to do with him as well, but obviously wasn't able to because I was back in the Dáil. And he talked about three generations of families, of the one family being able to have a viable farm into the future. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, nitrates derogation is a key part of that in terms of the pressure we'll put on all farming sectors if we were to lose it. And he's going to tell that story back, as I'm going to tell that story. I will meet the commissioner on Monday over in Brussels.
That was a very nuanced answer on his part. I offered him the opportunity to say, yes, I do understand the Irish government's argument, but he didn't take that opportunity.
Well, what he said was one size doesn't fit all in terms of the European approach. And in response to your point around that, our argument is our pasture-based system in Ireland is very different to other EU countries. And that tells me he gets it. There's a reason we've had a derogation from this rule that most other European countries don't have, is because our farming system is very different to the likes of the Dutch or the Danish or other models.
And that's why our water quality continues to disimprove.
So there are different measurements of water quality and the pristine elements have gone down. And we absolutely know we have to turn a corner on that. But there is massive investment happening in this space. We see, you know, the Farming for Water initiative, the 60 million euro EIP, that investment happening on a very large scale. And what we set out in the programme for government was as well very much pioneered by Simon Harris, was that we would establish a cabinet subcommittee on water quality that wouldn't just focus on what farmers in the agriculture sector is doing, but what our local authorities are doing, what Ishka Éireann are doing, and those areas where we have sewage going into our water streams.
All right, but given the equivocal answer that he gave on the question, do you not think that it would be prudent now to start trying to find an off-ramp for the derogation rather than putting all of the eggs in one basket on retaining it?
Look, the loss of the derogation, as I say, would create pressure on land availability across all sectors. So it's not just about the 7,000 derogation farmers there. And I believe we can continue to farm in a way while we invest in improving our water quality. But what the Commissioner would have seen, the same way the officials saw it when they were over last year and I met them and brought them to a farm, Irish farmers, you know, to be able to continue to invest in improving water quality, in reducing our emissions, in improving biodiversity from our farming system, the farm needs to be viable.
Okay,
the farm has to make an income.
That's not an answer to my question, because no doubt you're right, it would be disruptive if it goes. But if it goes, would we not be better off using this time between now and then to start putting a plan B in place?
It is an answer to your question, because my point is the knock-on impact of losing the derogation would have an intensification in many ways. That viability piece is key to farmers continuing to be able to invest in that area. And I'm really confident and optimistic that we can turn the trend in terms of water quality. And I took great heart from the Commissioner referencing the need for time. Obviously, it's not his decision. And this is something that strikes me in terms of the responsibility and the role I take on. Three of the main issues you discussed with the Commissioner that will have a huge impact on Irish farmers, none of which are in the gift of the Commissioner for Agriculture. Human nitrates, Mercosur, or nature restoration. And that is a key part of our challenge, that the goalposts have changed for farmers, not because of agricultural policy, but policy from other sections in Europe that has directly impacted agriculture.
Well, let's turn then to one that is in your gift, as he says. His message to the Irish government in its opposition to the Mercosur trade deal was clear. He said, make your businesses competitive and you've nothing to fear from imports from these countries. Does he have a point?
You know, when we talk about Mercosur, it's always talked about in terms of the economic impact. That's been a large amount of the focus there. And the point I will make at the Agfish Council meeting in Brussels on Monday when I go over and I meet the Commissioner for the first time is my real concern here is, like, our industry is big enough and strong enough to possibly withstand that economic impact if this was to come true. It is. It would be a hit, but you financially, you know, you could see that. But the difficulty is to secure farmer buy-in on further environmental measures into the future. If the sentiment is that Europe is saying one thing and then doing another by letting in produce with a much lower environmental credentials than what the standards we're held to. And that is the key place. We can't lose the room with farmers. We have to bring farmers with us in this. And that's why the Irish government is opposed to Mercosur. And that's why we'll be making that point. And Simon Harris will be out in Brussels on Monday too, meeting with his counterparts in the area of trade and foreign policy. And we continue to engage with the Commission as they go through the legal text. We are months away from that stakeholder engagement that would ultimately lead to a vote. But we continue to engage intensively with other like-minded countries who share our concerns around Mercosur.
Are you not in a lonely position on that, though?
No, we have France, we have Austria, we have other countries who are weighing it up. It's going to be very hard to stop. It needs a 35% bloc and minority of, that's 35% of the EU population. So ultimately, Ireland, you know, and we have to be honest about this, we can't directly influence it in terms of the size of our population. But we have a disproportionate voice in relation to the size of our population. And I'll be making that voice heard very loudly and clearly because we need to bring farmers with us on this journey.
Well, now, on that issue of bringing farmers with you, if I am interpreting the Commissioner correctly, it doesn't sound like there is going to be a separate and a dedicated fund for implementing the Nature Restoration Law. Does that disappoint you?
First of all, I think he was very clear in referencing this is a very important year in terms of the, first of all, Europe agreeing what's called the MFF, the Multi-Financial Framework, which is the overall budget that will fund all of the different ambitions that member states have. We have got to see a rebalancing of the cap. And, you know, in a little more than 17 months' time, Ireland will have the presidency of the EU, which will be the second, which will be at the pivotal moment when we're trying to get the cap over the line. I'm going to use the next 17 months to make sure Europe and my European colleagues and ministers across Europe are aware of what our key focus is, because what we want to see here is a simplified cap that delivers, but it has to be well funded.
That's what you want to see, but the man who is going to be designing the next cap is saying that he is more inclined to leave the funding of the Nature Restoration Law to the markets rather than trying to find a pot of money within cap. Does that disappoint you?
His initial answer to your first question was a separate fund would be a preference, and that would be absolutely my preference. We need to see a rebalancing.
That would be up to member states to come up with that money. Do you think they're going to do that?
But well, what I'm saying is, and what I will continue to advocate, and the Irish government will continue to advocate, is Irish farmers believe, and I would share this belief, that Europe lost its way in terms of what CAP was originally set up for. The core principles around food security and putting a real value on producing top quality food has been eroded down through the years. And what we want to see is a rebalancing where the importance of food production and food security is taken, you know, absolutely in equal measure, and it is a top priority in terms of that CAP. So we don't want to see, you know, funds for environmental measures erode the core premise of what CAP is. We understand it's going to be a really difficult budgetary negotiations, because, and I think the Commissioner was being very frank when he said he's aware other member states will struggle to be willing to pay more for these measures. So where we can tap into outside money, I think we should be open to that.
No clear funding for nature restoration, and your programme for government makes it clear that it's going to be voluntary. So there's
It's not right to say no clear funding. The question is where funding will come from. But what we have said very clearly as a government is that nature restoration, we have enough state land to deliver this all.
No, hang on a second. My point here is the bigger point. The funding is uncertain. Your programme for government removes any obligation from farmers, saying that it's
absolutely
all going to be voluntary.
Yep.
So what's going to happen to nature while you're minister?
Because we can deliver all of our obligations up to 2040 on state-owned land. We will create the possibility there for farmers who want to.
You can deliver all of your re-wetting obligations on state-owned land. You can't restore biodiversity on state-owned land.
I genuinely believe, I've been part in my own farm at home with an innovation project around the pollinator. I've seen farmers go over and beyond in terms of investing in bio.
Some, voluntarily, but
many.
Nature is still
the ambition
in peril.
Is there. And we will get the structure right in terms of supporting farmers to do that. But it can't be at the cost of the direct support that farmers need to produce the top quality food that they do. And we will get that balance right. But farmers who are asked to do that initial proposal on nature restoration, you know, has changed a lot. And the Irish government and the previous government I was part of, we managed to get in there and change that to something that is voluntary. And I believe farmers will, if we get the structure right, some will consider that and be able to do that, because farmers do care about biodiversity as well as producing top quality food they do.
The MAC curve is our toolbox of methods, if you like, to reduce greenhouse gases on farms. And if we don't get that right, we're going to incur anywhere between 8 and 20 billion of fines come 2030. When I read the programme for government, I see increased ambitions and supports for pretty much every area of agricultural activity. It's a bit of a wish list. But there's no mention of increased support for MAC. In fact, there's no mention in this document of MAC at all. Why is it not more important to you?
So for fear that listeners to this programme who wouldn't be familiar with what farmers are doing and the work and the innovation that farmers have adopted in their food production systems, it's really important to remind people that farmers over the last number of years have reduced their emissions while continuing to produce that top quality food. So we are on that trajectory. We are doing that.
They have, but the EPA says we're not going to reach the target.
So I all sectors of society are going to struggle to reach the target. So I think it's important.
But you're responsible for agriculture.
I am. And I would like to reflect before I answer that question to say farmers are more than doing their bit and we're heading in the right direction and we are going to support them in that. It is a given that we are going to continue to support farmers in the efforts they're taking to continue to produce top quality food. And the reason...
Why isn't MAC in this document then, if you are going to support that?
The Programme for Government document clearly sets out exactly how we're going to support our farmers in everything to do. This isn't a one-dimensional thing.
But if this is a priority, and I've read this document four times, I couldn't find MAC anywhere in it at all.
So what a priority is supporting our farmers to have viable farm incomes. If you talk to farmers, one of the biggest issues they face or that would concern them is the area of succession. That area of succession is a concern because the next generation of farmers, particularly, you know, small beef and sheep farmers, will say,
is there an income for me in that space?
Big
issue for you, big issue in the programme for government, big issue for Christoph Hansen as well. But you're deflecting from the concern about reducing greenhouse gases.
I'm not. You're overly focusing on it, and that's fine. Farmers will do that because farmers can do more than one thing at the same time. They can produce that top quality food that's trusted at home and abroad and reduce their emissions. Okay. It is a given we're going to continue to support farmers in that space. You look at that part of the programme for government where we talk about our biomethane strategy, and we support farmers with alternative incomes, you know, to supplement the income from the food they produce. You look at the work we've done to put be able to put solar panels on the roofs of sheds.
I'm not disputing any of that.
We have made strides there,
but the risk here is fines of up to 20 billion euro. Why is that not given greater priority in this document, or any priority at all?
It is all over the programme for government document, the elements we're making in climate, but it's not a one-dimensional conversation. Farmers can't go green if they're in the red. So I would argue that, you know, we have to make sure our farming system is viable, that farmers are getting a fair return for what they're doing. And then, and you know, the commission officials would have seen this and the commissioner would have seen it. That's how you support your farmers to invest in further measures to reduce emissions. The Chagas MAC curve is our roadmap. We are adopting a series of, you know, new innovations across the board that farmers do. And the point I've made to farmers before is we're not doing that just because it's the right thing to do by the environment. It's actually the smart business play for farming to do, because those high value markets that we want to export the majority of our food and drink produce in, they have that higher level of climate ambition. They have their scope 3 requirements that they're so aware of. And Ireland is leading the way in terms of producing that food sustainably, and we will continue to do that into the future.
Martin Hayden, Minister for Agriculture, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and good luck over the course of the next 5 years, if indeed fate allows you,
thank you, Philip.
Full 5 years in office.